Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Howard.
Present.
Howard.
Present.
Tice.
Present.
Egbadget. Egbadget. Bliss.
Present.
Gomez.
Present.
Hassan.
Present.
Heinrich.
Present.
Herr. Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Olson.
Present.
Farr.
Present.
And Ryer.
Present.
Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. I have a feeling Rules Committee is running long because the two who didn't respond are both on the Rules Committee, so that may still be going. The next order of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 4. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. So moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? If not, members, if you would unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And I'm now going to hand over the gavel to Vice Chair Howard for a presentation of two of my bills on the agenda. Chair Howard, you have the floor.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Would you like to move your bill?
I will move that House File 1634 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. And as I understand, there is an amendment. Would you like to move the amendment as well?
Yes, I will move adoption of the A1 amendment. And members, this bill is part of the Homes for All agenda. And when we initially had it drafted, they had not yet made their decision on what their ask was going to be this year. They have now made that decision, and that is incorporated in the A1 amendment. So we've filled in the numbers, $400 million for housing infrastructure bonds and $100 million for geobonding for public housing. That's the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. And I believe we can do this via a voice vote. So if you would unmute yourselves, members, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I said, this is part of the Homes for All agenda. And we've added the amendment. So there's $500 million in bonds toward the development and preservation of affordable housing around the state. The request truly impacts the entire state, and there are many communities that are struggling with housing needs. While the needs vary from community to community, one thing is clear. We do not have enough housing that people can afford, especially for our state's lowest earners. Think of the person serving our children's lunches at school, checking us out at the grocery store, taking care of our loved ones as home health care aides. One of the most stark statistics we have from the most recent Wilder Foundation homeless study is that 56% of individuals entered homelessness because they could not afford housing. This is likely a conservative estimate as well, because that estimate was before the pandemic and doesn't count households that are doubled up in their living arrangements or sleeping in vehicles. So this request incorporates $100 million to support preservation and safety upgrades to publicly owned housing. There are 21,000 units of public housing around the state. Repairs to these properties are absolutely crucial because in smaller communities, publicly owned housing is the only affordable housing. If we lose it, we lose it permanently, along with the federal rental assistance. There is over $350 million in deferred maintenance of our state's public housing. $350 million, an immediate need that has been documented. The second part of the bill is $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds to support deeply affordable housing with a prioritization on 30% AMI. Both with and without supportive services. Permanent supportive housing is one model but there are also some of these that don't require those supportive services. There is a 65,000 unit supply gap. There is a 65,000 unit supply gap to serve households at or below 30% AMI. Deeper affordability does mean deeper subsidy, and the best financing tool to help us get there is through housing infrastructure bonds. It's a tool that we only started using in 2014, so it's a relatively new one, but has proven to be very, very valuable, important, and needed for housing. Through this financing, nonprofits and other affordable housing developers are able to leverage private financing. So general obligation bonding can only be used for public housing. This allows us to partner with nonprofits and others. For every $1 in state funding, it leverages $4 in private financing or preserves $4 in federal subsidy. If we lose a federal subsidy, we don't get it back. We're, by the way, observing this week, Homeless Week on the Hill, so it's an appropriate time to hear the Homes for All agenda and to move it on. This bill will be heard in capital investment on Thursday. The COVID pandemic has highlighted how important stable housing is and how vulnerable so many Minnesota families are. I have four testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. First up, I believe we have Pastor Sue Kosterman, if you could state your name for the record and share your testimony with the committee.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Pastor Sue Kosterman, and I serve as the Chief Executive Officer at Churches United for the Homeless in Moorhead. I also serve as a co-chair for the Minnesota Homes for All Coalition. Chair Howard and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify this day. Churches United for the Homeless is a 501c3 corporation in the state of Minnesota. We are approximately 37 years old. We provide shelter in two shelter locations, stable housing at our Bright Sky Apartments, which are permanent supportive housing, and nutrition support at two food pantries. As many of you know, the Homes for All Coalition as endorsing membership of 270 plus organizations and representation in every county in Minnesota. Our state is in an affordable housing crisis that is being felt statewide and across the continuum. Research from Coalition member Minnesota Housing Partnership said that over 500,000 Minnesota households pay more than they can afford in housing. The COVID-19 pandemic is making this clear, and without housing assistance, the eviction moratorium, thousands of Minnesota families would be on the verge of homelessness. Like many issues, working to solve Minnesota's affordable housing crisis is complex, but a safe, affordable, and accessible home is a necessary foundation if we want to have better education outcomes for our children, healthcare that has meaningful long-term benefits and places for our growing workforce to live, especially our lowest earners. We can make progress towards meeting Minnesota's affordable housing needs with larger and more predictable investments to help our neighbors and our communities thrive. Support for House File 1634 would put $500 million in bonds towards the development and preservation of affordable housing around the state. This request incorporates $100 million to support preservation and safety upgrades to publicly owned housing and $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds to support deeply affordable housing with a prioritization on 30% or less of average area median income, both with and without supportive services. I'd like to speak for a moment about Churches United for the Homeless's experience with housing infrastructure bonds and the importance of this. I joined the organization in 2016. At that time, we had just been approved to move forward with building the Bright Sky Apartments. The Bright Sky Apartments were constructed and the first tenants moved in 2018. They provide 43 units of permanent supportive housing with 24/7 front desk support and case management services available. 22 of the units are efficiencies and one bedroom units. 21 of the units are 2, 3, or 4 bedroom units for families. All of the units are occupied by households who have a history of chronic long-term homelessness and other barriers to stable housing. Just this past year, in March of 2020, we looked back on our tenant rolls and the length of tenancy in the units. At that time, of the 43 units, 20 had been occupied by the same household for more than a year, and 15 of them had been occupied for the same household for more than 2 years. As those of you who are familiar with the challenges around housing stability may know, that is a very good set of statistics indeed. We are also in the process of requesting financing from the Minnesota Housing and Finance Agency to construct another permanent supportive housing building. This building will be called the Silver Linings Apartments and has been recommended to advance at this point for HIB funding. Silver Linings, when it is constructed, will provide 36 units of permanent supportive housing for seniors 55 and older. This is the fastest growing demographic among the homeless population in our region and in many places across the state, as well as nationally. So I want to urge you to support House File 1634 and to support the development of more permanent supportive housing and affordable housing without supports throughout the state of Minnesota. Homes for All looks forward to working with both chambers of the legislature and the governor's office to find a path forward to help meet Minnesota's affordable housing needs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you for your testimony, Pastor Kesterman. Up next, we have Mr. Brian Charlie. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Charlie. If you would state your name for the committee and share your testimony with us. It looks like you're on mute, Mr. Charlie.
Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you can hear me now?
We can hear you.
How's everybody going? Having a good day so far?
We're good, Mr. Charlie. If you would share your name with us officially for the record, and we'd love to hear your testimony.
Oh, okay. My name is Brian David Charlie. Originally born in Los Angeles, California. Born and raised. I ended up in here out in the Midwest due to my mom passing in 1999. That was a big loss for me. Even though I went home, it just wasn't home anymore. I didn't feel like it was home because my mom was missing, and so since she was from up here, Devil's Lake, she wanted to be buried up here, so we brought her up this way, and I've been up here ever since. I ended up in Minot, North Dakota, and I was starting a new life and starting fresh, you know. I had a son. He was born 2007, his name is Lennox Charlie. The flood came, hit us hard out there. And it was so sad. I mean, we lost everything. We actually seen our house flood down the street in Minot. We had it very hard for about a good almost a year. It was pretty rough. But I was thankful that we had a lot of help from the Red Cross, from other people helping. You know, the only thing I could do is pray to the Creator and help us out with what was going on during the time. We eventually moved back down this way to Fargo, and I started out at Teachers United, I believe. I went there because some other guy had told me about it. And, you know, at the time, you know, I have anxiety, depression. And I have anxiety so bad that, like, a lot of times I don't even want to deal with my dialysis. I have dialysis appointments that sometimes it's hard on me. Till this day, like, I am so dang grateful and thankful for Churches United and for people that help in this organization. I love you guys. I love everybody that's put their hearts into this. I try to help out as much as I can around here. I usually stick to myself except for like a couple people and staff. But I've come a long way since the flood out there in Minot. I don't know. I feel home now. This is home. And I'd like to thank everyone, including Pastor Sue, for helping me through a lot of times. I mean, you know, all of us have our good days. All of us have, you know, worst days, but my day is like, I wake up in the morning, pray to the Lord, and pray for the rest of us here living at the Bright Sky Apartments. There is a lot of good people here. There's a lot of good people here. There was a nurse here that was Nurse Pat that recently retired. And I got to say, she was one of the best nursing that we've had here so far. I've seen her so many years, you know, helping people, you know, taking people for their doctor appointments or, you know, helping them in any kind of ways. And when you see help, even if it's just the little tiniest thing, could be the biggest thing for that person. And that's what I seen from Churches United. They helped me out. A lot. I come a long way from being homeless. I was homeless for about a good 8 years. And, you know, from sleeping at people's houses, sleeping in cars, it was really rough, but, you know, God put it through me. You know, sometimes you got to struggle to get everything right. And I see that I'm getting everything. I'm doing everything right.
Thank you, Mr. Charlie. Thank you for spending your time with us and sharing your story and contributing to our work to help people across the state. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Most definitely. You're welcome.
Next, we have William Delaney testifying.
Great. Thank you. Chair Howard, Minority Lead Tice, and members of the committee, my name is Will Delaney, and I am the Associate Director of Hope Community in Minneapolis. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1634, the Homes for All bonding request. I hope to highlight the importance of housing infrastructure bonds and the need to expand the eligible use to include deeper affordability so affordable housing providers can meet the needs of extremely low-income Minnesota households that need supportive services as well as those that do not. Tomorrow, March 10th, is Hope Community's 44th anniversary as an organization rooted in the Phillips community just south of downtown Minneapolis. Located at the intersection of Franklin and Portland Avenues, HOPE is a nonprofit community development organization focused on community-based solutions, organizing, and of course, investing in our neighborhood through quality, affordable housing as an alternative to gentrification. Since the organization started developing affordable housing 30 years ago, we have seen how central stable housing is to the ability of families to thrive. We see it every day. A family that has stable housing has a platform from which the rest of their lives and the rest of our community can thrive. Social connectedness, learning, entrepreneurial opportunities, youth able to grow and show off their brilliance in spaces like our Teen Technology Center, all of that is more able to happen when families have quality, long-term, affordable housing. In short, housing is fundamental to strong individuals, strong communities, and a strong Minnesota. Today, Hope Community owns and operates nearly 300 units of quality, affordable homes that are home to over 750 individuals and families every night. Like most developers of affordable housing, we have made use of many Minnesota housing financing tools over the years, including the housing infrastructure bonds, most recently with a rehabilitation project of 30 of our oldest units, units that primarily serve individuals and couples leaving long-term homelessness with the aid of supportive services. In our housing portfolio, we have units that are affordable across the income spectrum. Most are affordable to households at 30 or 50% of AMI, some serving people leaving long-term homelessness, many serving people just at very low rents, and about 25% of our units are also affordable at market rates, since those are very much needed in a healthy community as well. Some families make use of our housing as a stepping stone to a move to other housing or home ownership, but we have many, many individuals and families who have called our buildings and Phillips home for years, and in more than a few cases, decades. Our organizing and community building programs at Hope include many of those individuals and families. With that stable housing, they are building community with their neighbors, growing their skills, and working collectively to make our city and state a more equitable place to live. Currently, for every one project that does receive funding from Minnesota Housing, three projects are not able to move forward. The expansion of the new eligible use would allow organizations like Hope Community to provide much needed housing to people at or below 50% area median income, where there is tremendous demand. More so, the units targeted at 30% of AMI are the most needed and have become increasingly difficult to produce in the current funding landscape. We know that while many individuals and families at 30% of AMI benefit greatly from supportive services, there's a huge need for quality housing available at those income levels for people who do not need such services, people who just simply need a decent place they can afford. The market has not and cannot serve that need, which is why the investment that our state puts in through these bonds is a critical piece of our community's infrastructure. Being able to provide deeply affordable units both with and without supportive services is an important component of creating balanced projects and to meet community needs. We see the impacts of the affordable housing crisis every day and understand how quickly we need to work to increase the availability of quality affordable housing for people with lower incomes and people experiencing homelessness. I'm here to tell you that housing infrastructure bonds make that possible. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions should you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Delaney. And our last testifier is Melissa Taphorn. If you would state your name for the record and share your testimony with the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County Community Development Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Minnesota NARO, whose members own and operate over 20,000 units of publicly owned housing across this great state. And as we are the housing and redevelopment authorities and public housing agencies that would be eligible for the general obligation bonds, my testimony is focused on that aspect of this bill. Public housing is a critical piece of the housing continuum, with the vast majority of households headed by seniors and persons with disabilities. Public housing provides safe and affordable homes to low-income people who would otherwise lack of adequate housing. Minnesota NARO and its members strongly support the provision of general obligation bonds to publicly owned housing, as presented in this bill, to address the unmet capital needs of those public assets. Based on a March 2019 report, Minnesota's public housing had just shy of $355 million of total immediate critical needs, or an average of $16,790 per unit of capital improvements. General obligation bonds for public housing preserve our investment in those existing units through the publicly owned housing program, commonly referred to as POP. POP funds are used for major capital improvements to address health, safety, and energy efficiency improvements, such as new roofs, boilers, or elevators. It is noteworthy that most of the funding goes to housing located in greater Minnesota. My own community has benefited from this program. In 2010, the Washington County CDA took ownership of a 40-unit public housing building located in Forest Lake. The Forest Lake HRA, or Housing and Redevelopment Authority, had dissolved, and that was their only asset. As it is true for many small public housing agencies, they did not receive enough federal capital funds to keep up with the growing costs to properly maintain the building. We applied for and were successful in receiving a POP loan to complete needed repairs in order to preserve these units. We coupled those POP funds with our capital funds and our CDA levy dollars in order to replace shower mixing valves in every unit and the drain pipes, which were beginning to fail and causing damage to adjacent apartment units. This allowed us also to install additional isolation valves to the plumbing system so that when future repairs are needed, we can shut off water supply to just a handful of units rather than the entire building. The POP funds further helped us replace the aging boilers with an energy recovery system to better serve the building's large atrium common area and replace the water heaters with new energy efficient models. These are not improvements that command a grand reopening event and sometimes are not easily identifiable by residents. However, if left undone, can lead to building failure. In the last four funding cycles, $45.5 million of POP funds have been awarded for the rehabilitation of over 6,600 publicly owned apartments. This represents 13% of that immediate critical needs identified in the 2019 report. Another $15 million is currently available in the application cycle at Minnesota Housing, and we appreciate this committee's and the legislature in total that they provided these funds to develop affordable housing in Minnesota and rebuild existing public housing units throughout the state. On behalf of the 140 housing and redevelopment authorities in Minnesota NARO, I urge you to continue to support these critically needed bonds for housing, which not only preserve our physical assets, but also the dignity of the seniors and families residing in these apartments. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak today in favor of House File 1634.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. That concludes the testimony that we had planned. Do members have any questions for Representative Hausman or for any of our testifiers? I'll give folks a minute to see if I see any hands. And if not, I will turn it back to Representative Hausman to make final comments on the bill before we move to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate member support for this portion of the Homes for All agenda, which next goes to capital investment. Am I renewing my motion?
Representative Hausman, if you would renew your motion.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1634, as amended, be recommended to pass. These phone calls are a problem. I renew my motion that House File 1634, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
Mr. Wilcox, will you take the roll?
Howard?
Aye.
Hausman?
Aye.
Tice?
No.
Agbaje?
Aye.
Bliss?
No.
Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan? Hassan? Heinrich?
No.
Hurd?
Aye.
Juergens?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Barr?
No.
Ryer?
Aye.
Hassan? All right, Mr. Chair, that is 7 ayes and 5 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox, and this bill has been referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Representative Hausman, would you like to present your second bill on the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1634 be brought before the committee, and this bill will be laid over. This is potential in the funding bill.
Representative Hausman has moved her bill. Please take it away.
There is an amendment to the bill. The governor's amount for this this particular fund was higher than ours. We're bringing our request in line with the governor's with the amendment that you have before you. I would move that adoption of the amendment.
Representative Hausman moves the A1. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hausman, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill funds HECAT, H-E-C-A-T, which stands for Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training Program. The Homeownership Education Training Fund is the primary way the state supports education and advising for lower income households and households of color to achieve homeownership. We know that homeownership builds wealth. And so helping people to get to that point is helpful to the state. Access to independent education and advising like that supported by HECAT is one of the primary contributors to promoting homeownership in communities of color. HECAT is instrumental in providing support to homeowners facing mortgage crisis. And as we learned during the foreclosure crisis, homeowners with mortgage problems are three times more likely to stay in their homes if they have access to foreclosure counseling like that which HECAT supports. Given the homeownership crisis caused by COVID, we need to increase funding in order to stabilize families and communities. Funding provided by the state through HECAT leverages over $1 million in private and federal dollars. I have two testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. First up is Julie Guggen.
Chair Howard and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Julie Guggen, and I am president of the nonprofit Minnesota Home Ownership Center. We are an intermediary sitting at the center of a diverse group of stakeholders who are dedicated to equitable access to homeownership. A primary business line is homeownership education, financial counseling, and foreclosure prevention. We work with 40 nonprofit and community-based organizations around the state on this work. A primary source of funding for our network is HECAT. Last year, HECAT supported over 5,000 households statewide in their pursuit of sustainable homeownership. 63% of those households are households of color. The median income of the families HECAT supports is $41,000. Services funded by HECAT open doors to down payment assistance programs and affordable lending tools. Many require the services offered by our network. Financial coaching and home buyer services like those supported by HECAT are continually cited as a critical element of closing the homeownership gap. In addition, HECAT provides much needed funding for foreclosure prevention services. Any homeowner in Minnesota, regardless of income, is eligible for free, unbiased mortgage crisis and foreclosure counseling support. Since 2008, the center and our network have helped more than 38,000 households successfully avoid foreclosure. Our current estimates are that at least 30,000 homeowners in Minnesota are seriously delinquent due to COVID. That is 90 days or more past due. As temporary mortgage relief programs begin to lift, those homeowners will need support from our network in navigating the complex and fraught process of negotiating with lenders, understanding the foreclosure process, and knowing their legal rights. The center is determined to prevent a repeat of the 2008 foreclosure crisis, during which so many lower and middle income individuals and families lost so much. An increase in HECAT funding is essential to stabilizing homeownership in Minnesota and advancing equitable access to homeownership in communities of color. Thank you for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Guggen. Up next, we have Portia Jackson. Please state your name for the committee, Ms. Jackson, and share your testimony with the committee.
Hello, my name is Portia Jackson. Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Portia Jackson, and I'm a homeownership specialist with the Washington County Community Development Agency. I assist people in the goal of attaining affordable quality homeownership through money management, building and repairing credit, and connecting them with trusted community resources. I also facilitate home stretch homebuyer education workshops that provide valuable information to first-time homebuyers across the entire process of home buying, from budgeting and mortgage readiness to life as a homeowner. In these workshops, I collaborate with mortgage professionals, real estate agents, home inspectors, title agents, and financial nonprofits that provide invaluable real-time information on the current home buying climate and take questions from prospective homebuyers. I also help people stay in their homes through our foreclosure prevention program. I provide information on the timeline of foreclosure in Minnesota and tools that consumers can use to cure delinquencies with their mortgage loan servicers and keep their homes. Most times, I can even help homeowners obtain a lower, more affordable payment through loan modification. I am very passionate about this work as a housing counselor supported me in the process of buying my first home almost 6 years ago. As a Black first-generation college graduate and mother of five, I knew that homeownership was a big step in the direction of stability and building intergenerational wealth for my family. I was provided the tools and resources necessary to purchase an affordable, quality home from PRG. Owning a home has given my children the foundation to excel in school and sports and realize their hopes and dreams. The Homeownership Education Counseling and Training Fund, or HECAT, makes the work that I do possible. This important financial support enables Minnesota's Housing Counseling Network to provide intensive financial empowerment and homeownership training to low to moderate income households, with the focus on households of color who have been historically excluded from owning homes, obtaining fair loans, and thriving in neighborhoods of their choice. Increasing HECAP funds will help us make the dream of homeownership a reality for Minnesotans that may otherwise be edged out due to lack of tools, resources, and education. HECAP directly changed my family's narrative from survive to thrive and can continue to do so for families on an even higher level with increased funding. Thank you for your consideration and your time.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson, for your testimony and your work. Representative Hausman, I'll turn it back to you to make any final comments unless I do see questions. Are there any members that have questions for Representative Hausman or our testifiers? I see Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, for carrying this bill. I think it's very important. I've been having one of those weeks, so I apologize. I just got a new phone this morning and it's not working right. Everything's not going right. But I just want to say that I think this is very important for what the mission of this committee is. I did have to step out for a moment and missed part of the comment section from last time. But I just want to say that we do need to make housing a priority. I also think that we need to be realistic, and I don't know that we're going to have that big of a bonding bill this year. It just so I think we'll probably do better work next year and see it then. I will be supporting them it then, but I can't tell you how many folks I get phone calls from saying, I don't know if I can make it another day. So I'm being very, very, what do I want to say? Not just hesitant to put too much out there and make people and have people be a little bit too optimistic, because it isn't always every day. But this is a really good way for us to say, yes, we can be optimistic. There's a lot of training that we can do. I love these types of programs, and I just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Tice, and Representative Hausman, comment.
Just that I thank you, the chair, and I thank the committee for their attention to this budget request.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Would you like to renew your motion to lay the bill over?
This one is just laid over, I think. Okay.
And with that, I will hand the virtual gavel back to the chair, gladly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your assistance. We now have a House File 203, Representative Jordan, before us. The chair moves that House File 203 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. I think this is the first one we are going directly to the general register. Representative Jordan, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. Thank you for your consideration of House File 203, which at its core is a bill about affordable housing in my community. Stonehouse Square is a historic building that has provided affordable housing in Northeast Minneapolis since 1895, when it was built and managed by the Little Sisters of the Poor to care for seniors. It was taken over and renovated to continue to provide affordable housing in the neighborhood and still serves its mission today. The development was slated to receive bonds from the state last year to preserve this affordable housing and was on track to do so until Minnesota was faced with the COVID-19 pandemic. Common Bond faced many hurdles and as a result is facing the need to pay a double bond fee. Paying twice will negatively impact their mission to bring affordable housing not only to my constituents, but low-income Minnesotans across the state. So here to better explain the hurdles they faced over the past year, Common Bond's mission, and why this bill is needed, I'd like to ask Cecile Bedore to speak and answer technical questions members of the committee may have, Madam Chair. And I will also be around to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Cecile Bedore, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Bedore is muted right now.
She is okay. She is on mute.
When will you not have to say that anymore? I apologize. So again,
welcome.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Cecile Bedore, and I serve as the Executive Vice President of Real Estate for Common Bond Communities. We're a nonprofit affordable housing developer, property manager, and service provider based in St. Paul, and we're celebrating our 50th anniversary of service this year. We currently serve over 10,000 people, rather, including, for example, seniors, families, veterans in both greater Minnesota and the metro area, operating nearly 8,000 units in 57 cities and suburban, urban, and rural communities, including, for example, Sunwood Village and Ramsey, Oak Ridge Manor in Oakdale, and West Broadway Crescent in Minneapolis, and many, many more. We own our housing in perpetuity, and we do provide professional on-site property management as well as some level of services at each community to help ensure stability, all reflecting our mission to build stable homes, strong futures, and vibrant communities. As Representative Jordan noted, we're here today to talk to you about one housing development in particular, Stonehouse Square, that realized significant setbacks due to COVID, which created an unforeseen storm of circumstances that slowed its development. Again, our specific ask is relief from having to pay a double bond fee, the requirement of which was directly related to COVID. As you've been hearing this morning, due to the growing need for affordable housing, it really is imperative that we preserve the affordable housing we do have, which is exactly our goal with Stonehouse Square, a 71-unit historic housing community in Northeast Minneapolis. We serve 19 families with very low wages due to the support of scarce federal Section 8 rental assistance. And the balance of the units serve moderate income earners with rents affordable at or below 60% of area median income or naturally occurring affordable below market rents for tenants. The market dynamics in North Minneapolis, where this property is located, has seen significant rent increases, which threatens low and moderate wage earners' ability to stay in their neighborhood. Stonehouse is a really good example of a property at risk to conversion to market rate. But after deep discussions with the seller, he accepted our offer. I think it's really important to note that we were not the highest offer, but he accepted it in the spirit of maintaining affordability. And because of our commitment to the same and due to the strong indications of support from our partners, we purchased the property in September of 2019. Since then, we have worked really hard to secure the necessary funding to renovate this historic property, ensuring that we leverage our public dollars with significant private capital. Those sources include federal and state historic tax credits, 4% low-income housing tax credits, affordable housing investment funds from Hennepin County, affordable housing trust funds from the city of Minneapolis, a deferred mortgage from Minnesota Housing, brownfield grants from the Met Council and the city of Minneapolis, a markup to market on the HUD Section 8 HAP contract, as well as an amortizing first mortgage. As you can imagine, utilization of these various financing tools requires a great deal of coordination among various regulatory and funding agencies. In particular, the City of Minneapolis, the State Historic Preservation Office, the National Park Service, and HUD, and key work with these agencies was set to begin in early March of last year, right when COVID hit and right when we all experienced our first shutdown. As you know, many agencies, including our own and the state of Minnesota, had to figure out how to get their staff the tools they needed to work remotely, and in turn, staff had to figure out how to professionally function in a remote work environment. For example, Minneapolis plan review staff had to review over 200 pages of construction plans. This slowed down an already busy business area, and we didn't receive their approval until August after the deadline. In addition, HUD halted on-site unit inspections, which are required to complete the markup-to-market housing assistance payment contract. And in addition, we needed final approval from both our Part 1 and Part 2 for the historic tax credits, first by SHPO and then by the National Park Service, and they had to be done sequentially. Because of COVID, both entities completely changed their processes and systems, which resulted in backlogs and delays. Other developers with less complicated deals that were not subject to all the entities' participation that we were able to get to closing. I want to assure you we did everything we could, but we simply could not make the deadline due to circumstances beyond our control. I also want to make sure you know that we did not give up, and we now have received all the required historic approvals, as well as approvals from the City of Minneapolis, and we're set to reapply for bonds in July with a closing targeted for September. If we don't receive a credit, however, of our first bond fee and have to pay it again, we'll have a nearly $300,000 gap. To the best of my knowledge, I've been with Common Bond for about 3 years and have checked. Common Bond has never returned financing like tax credits or bonds as we did for Stonehouse. We have a well-earned reputation for submitting quality applications, closing on our awards, and completing our projects on time and budget. For example, we had 6 projects under construction during COVID last year. And even though we did have one that had to shut down briefly due to a COVID outbreak, we nevertheless completed all projects on time and within budget. The situation with Stonehouse is unique for the reasons I've just reviewed with you. As you know, the bond statute from 2019 requires that all bonds be issued within 180 days of the date of allocation. When it became evident that those delays that I've just reviewed were going to make it impossible to close in the bonds for Stonehouse by the deadline, Common Bond requested that the bonds be returned to MMB, which they were. Those bonds were then redeployed to other projects on the waiting list immediately, so our return bonding authority was not lost. As such, we hope you'll agree that Common Bond should not be penalized by having to pay the bond fee twice. So in summary, we are committed to ensuring Stonehouse is preserved as affordable housing in perpetuity, but simply have no more room to make up for cuts and a deficit, make up for a deficit that would be caused by a double bond payment. I hope, Madam Chair and committee members, that you recognize the work we've done and trust that we're prepared to move forward on this important project. If you grant our request and thus not penalize Common Bond nor this project for events that we simply could not control. Thanks so much for your time and consideration. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and happy to address any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bedore, for your testimony. And so this bill is a technical fix necessitated by a timing issue, and no funding is required in this bill. Correct. And so that's members, do we have questions of the testifier or the author, Mr. Worth?
Madam Chair, there are no questions in the queue at this time.
Representative Jordan, do you have final comments?
Thank you for your time, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is really important for my community and people who rely on this housing. So thank you.
The chair renews her motion that House File 203 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
McBadgett?
Aye.
Bliss?
Aye.
Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan?
Aye.
Heinrich?
Aye.
Herr?
Aye.
Jurgens?
Jurgens, aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
And Ryer?
Aye.
Madam Chair, that is 13 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred.
Thank you. Very much appreciated.
Thank you. And now, Representative Howard has House File 528. Representative Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll move that House File 528 be laid over.
Representative Howard, to your bill.
Thank you, members. As this committee has really detailed this session, access to housing that Minnesotans can afford is a challenge across the state, from Minneapolis to Mankato, from Bloomington to Bemidji. We know that the challenges are real, but we also know those challenges differ from community to community. And we have some shared understanding that our local communities and local elected officials really have the heart of their community at work and know what is best and know what kind of housing they need. And that's what brings us to this bill, a local housing trust fund state match that would allow us to provide flexible assistance to leverage private investment and support communities to make the investments they know they need to make in their community. From way of background, in 2017, the legislature established definitions of local housing trust funds. Before that, only three existed throughout the state. Since, 13 communities across the state have established a housing trust fund to meet their local housing needs, and now there are more than 30 that are interested in doing so. This legislation would create a state match in the amount of $10 million to help support fund those local housing investments in flexible ways all across the state. This could be used by local communities to support affordable single-family housing, rehabilitation of single-family or rental housing, or addressing the deeper affordable housing that we've heard is so hard and is so needed in certain areas of the state. And so what this legislation is a way to support the needs we know are present all across the state in a strategic, targeted way that allows our local communities to lead. And with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Howard. We have first testifying Erica Coleman from the Bloomington HRA. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Erica Coleman. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erica Coleman, and I am the administrator of the Housing and Redevelopment Authority in and for the City of Bloomington. I'm here in support of House File 528. Cities are doing everything possible to address housing stability needs for residents. In 2019, the City of Bloomington established a local housing trust fund. What many may not know is that we took out a loan to fund the revolving loan fund and are still determining funds for our housing stability fund. Priorities for housing needs in Bloomington run the whole housing continuum, from people experiencing homelessness in our hotels to the need to create and preserve affordable housing options. Through our inclusionary zoning policy that created our local housing trust fund, we focus on 50% area median income and below for housing creation and preservation. As of December 2020, Bloomington has 5,544 naturally occurring affordable housing units, better known as NOA, in 88 properties with costs that are upwards of $100,000 per unit, give or take, for health and safety updates and stabilization of low to moderate income residents. It is difficult to have the funding and flexibility to be reactive and, better yet, proactive for our residents and owners without proper funding sources that are flexible to maintain safe, stable, decent, affordable housing. Local municipalities must have and maintain flexibility in funds, sources, and allocations to meet housing needs that are specific and timely to their communities, as well as the ability to incentivize use through a local housing trust fund, as opposed to state-level funds that are competitive and not as flexible. State partnership on housing issues is critical. Cities need to partner with the state on housing solutions. A state match for local housing trust funds is one way to do this. Enhancing existing trust funds and incentivizing and encouraging more cities to commit funds to housing needs because the state is supportive through a funding match. Municipalities should not be tasked with doing this work alone and in a silo when the concerns, issues, and solutions are statewide. We need state support through funding with flexibility. Housing needs during COVID-19 are not new. COVID-19 has revealed existing needs and inequities as well as exacerbated them. Any one of us can find ourselves at any place along the housing continuum at any time during our lives. Support through action and funding of a local housing trust fund match can and will address current pressing issues of housing needs and be a proactive tool in the near future. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate your consideration of House File 528.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we have Richard DeRosier from the Lake County HRA. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, ma'am. My name is Richard DeRozier. I'm kind of new to this whole testifying thing, so I apologize in advance. I was told I got about 3 minutes to talk, and my dry run was 3 minutes and 18 seconds. So I will, I'll try to shave off if I can.
I think we're just fine. I think we're going to be just fine.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for allowing me to address you this morning. I am also here in support of House File 528. Real quick background on myself. I'm a just recently retired out of law enforcement. I spent the last 33 years as an investigator with the Lake County Sheriff's Office. I've spent a career in trying to problem solve and make sense of a lot of things that quite simply just don't make any sense. I'm a board member for the Lake County HRA for the past 18 years. I'm also a city councilor for the city of Silver Bay for very close to that same amount of time. To give you just a brief geography lesson, again, I apologize. I don't mean to offend by no stretch, but Lake County sits up on the shore of Lake Superior, just north of Duluth. It goes all the way to the Canadian border, just east of Ely, Minnesota. Two Harbors is our county seat. The county is about 3,002 square miles. The next biggest city that we have is my city in Silver Bay here, with approximately 1,800 to 2,000 population. I think our county seat is about 3,500. Like so many areas across the state, Lake County just simply doesn't have enough housing for our residents, especially homes that are affordable to the residents and the workers here in our county. A specific example I can provide would be the North Shore Mining Taconite Plant in the city of Silver Bay. And North Shore Mining is certainly the largest employer in our area in Silver Bay, and it is certainly a very prominent employer for Lake County as a whole. They have recently completed an expansion, which we tried to capitalize on. It was a year or so ago. It created many long-term construction jobs, and when finished, it presented an opportunity for more full-time jobs here in our area. Our problem, as all over the state, is there was just no place for these people to live. You know, they'd come in, they'd live in their campers, or they'd live outside the area. We couldn't capture them, so to speak. We couldn't keep them there. There's just no place for them to stay. There are people who, for many years and currently, are working at that plant who travel as far away, round trip every day, all over the Iron Range, as far away as Grand Rapids, down to Cloquet, into Wisconsin, 100 plus miles back and forth to go to work. Just as I was trying to type this up this morning, I happened to look online to try to see what available houses were in our area. There is one house for sale in Silver Bay on Zillow and Beaver Bay, which is maybe 100 residents, 3 miles away. There's one online for that as well. So it's bleak. The limited supply of houses that go up for sale in our area, they're quickly snapped up by people outside the area for second homes and vacation style properties. The North Shore is a beautiful place and many people want to be a part of that. And although we welcome them here, we certainly do that. The simple fact of the matter is they're temporary residents. They're not putting families here that put kids in the schools that certainly help us out. They don't stay long enough to be part of a smaller workforce that could work at the hardware store or someplace in our small businesses. They're here and gone again. At the risk of sounding rude, they take up the homes is what's happening, especially in smaller communities. Lake County is currently working with a consultant to establish a local housing trust fund. Once we heard word of it, we thought that was a great idea. We're fortunate enough that we have some money in our coffers that we thought would a great potential with this possible state match to put that to good use. So we quickly hired a consultant, and we're working with her to help us navigate the water, so to speak. Assistance from the state in establishing a local housing trust fund for the Lake County HRA would be instrumental in implementing future projects and succeeding with the projects that we already have underway. Specifically, a match from the state for a local housing trust fund would be a generous offering which would be immediately put to use in a project to create affordable housing along a Penn Avenue corridor of Silver Bay. And if any of you are familiar with Silver Bay, we sit off the highway, so it's very simple. Other than the stoplight, people can just drive straight by and head up toward the Canadian border. Unless you take a left to come into town, you drive right by us. It's nice in some aspects, but not in others. This Penn Avenue corridor is another entryway into the city, kind of the back door from the range, so to speak. And the Lake County HRA currently is in the process of acquiring upwards of 50 lots of tax forfeited property that Lake County has that have been sitting there for years. We're in the middle of acquiring that. In fact, we've got it. It just got one more bug's got to be worked out, but it's ours. It'll get to us. And with that, we've hired an engineering firm, Boltman Mink, to help us with a conceptual plan of how to properly develop that property of that corridor. So the state partnership with a state match would really help small communities like ours, which have limited resources for housing.
Thank you. One more sentence. Okay.
I'm going in my 18 seconds now.
Got it.
I got a local housing trust fund is a fiscally responsible way to utilize the limited resources of a small HRA by leveraging with a state match. It's the smart thing to do and would be greatly beneficial for the creation of an affordable housing that Lake County so desperately needs. Thank you again for allowing me to address all of you this morning and your consideration in House File 528. And I am certainly also available for any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, are there questions for either the author or our testifiers? Mr. Worth?
Madam Chair, there are no questions in the queue.
This is Representative Howard, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to my testifiers. In way of my closing comments, what I would say is that, we just heard two stories about communities that understand that the access to quality, affordable housing is critical to the health, vitality, and long-term strength of their communities. And if time allowed, we would have community leaders, dozens of them from all across the state, coming to our committee to say the exact same thing. Our communities understand this, they are stepping up, and we as a state have an important role to listen and to step up with them to meet our housing challenges all across the state. And that's what this Local Housing Trust Fund state match bill would do. And I would encourage all of your support, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. House File 528 is laid over for consideration in our budget. Thank you. And we have one final bill, House File 979. Representative Olson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House File 979 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Olson, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. The development of affordable housing is increasingly becoming a critical issue to stabilize families, grow the economy, and create jobs across the state. Communities throughout Minnesota are limited by a lack of affordable housing for families with lower incomes, and businesses are struggling to hire workers who can't find affordable homes nearby. Nothing new to our committee, of course. House File 979 provides funding for the Challenge Program, which is the state's major resource to create and preserve affordable housing. The Challenge Program provides no-interest deferred loans to nonprofit or for-profit affordable housing developers and local units of government to create workforce housing in their communities. The Challenge Program is extremely flexible to ensure that it can work for a variety of housing needs statewide. It can be used for acquisition, rehabilitation, or new construction for both single-family home ownership and rental properties. It can also increase affordability for home ownership by filling the gap between how much a home costs to build and how much a low-income home buyer can afford to pay. Challenge is a proven program that works well for both home ownership and multifamily housing projects, and it serves Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities. The Challenge Program is widely used, and funding has not kept up to pace to support the need and demand statewide. Each year, several good projects that request funding do not receive it due to the lack of financing. The Challenge Program is currently funded at $25 million in the base, plus plus an additional $5 million in one-time funds. This bill provides an increase to $44,850,000 for the biennium. As our housing shortage grows throughout the state, we need to create and preserve more affordable homes to meet the needs of all Minnesotans. And with that, Madam Chair, we have a couple of testifiers who can further speak to the importance of this bill, and I will hand it over to them.
First, we have Robin Bipes-Tim. I hope I have pronounced that correctly, from Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you, Chair Houseman and members of the committee. I'm Robin Bipes-Tim. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. The mission of Habitat is to bring together people to create, preserve, and promote affordable home ownership and to advance racial equity in housing. We're asking for your support today for House File 979, which provides funding for the Challenge Program. Twin Cities Habitat is the largest nonprofit developer of affordable home ownership in the Twin Cities. At any given time, we have between 50 and 60 home builds happening simultaneously all across the metro. In our 35-year history, we've partnered with more than 1,500 families to achieve affordable home ownership. As I'm sure this committee knows, homeownership supports thousands of children, it stabilizes neighborhoods, and it boosts the economy. The benefits of homeownership ripple into every area of a family's life, and it really provides the foundation for success. Very important to us, homeownership is to acknowledge that homeownership is the primary way that most families build a stable financial base, and they pass on this wealth to their kids and future generations. And while Minnesota has one of the highest rates of homeownership in the country, we also have one of the worst gaps in homeownership based on race. 85% of our Twin Cities Habitat home buyers are families of color, so we're very committed to doing what we can to close this racial homeownership gap. Because homeownership provides this stability and builds generational wealth, we are being very intentional about creating more opportunities for families to own their own homes to close the gap. Challenge is amazing. The Challenge Program is the primary state funding resource we use for our home building program. It's really an integral piece of how we approach our work, how the Habitat model works. We use Challenge to leverage philanthropic dollars, corporate sponsorships for our home builds, donations from the more than 15,000 volunteers who swing a hammer with us as we build our homes each year. This past year in 2020, Challenge helped us build 63 Habitat homes in the Twin Cities. It helps us in two ways. It helps us be flexible and be innovative. On the flexibility side, we can do a lot of things with it. We can build new homes. We can acquire and rehab existing homes and make them affordable. It creates affordability as it fills the difference between how much a home buyer qualifies for a mortgage and what a home costs in the market now. Challenge is also really innovative. Using Challenge in the last couple of years, we created a new approach called the Open Market Program, where a Habitat home buyer has the option to buy a home for sale anywhere in the Seven County Metro with our affordable mortgage and down payment help. This open market program is actually really exciting. It's become a national model. Many other Habitat affiliates have reached out to Minnesota to learn from, and they're replicating in their states. With this approach, we've been able to double the number of home buyers that we support every year, now reaching more than 100 home buyers a year. Challenge is the base of this success. It has helped us also partner with community land trusts in Minneapolis and more recently in Carver County. We've funded 16 Habitat homes in the past 2 years that will remain permanently affordable. So for us, the Challenge program is extremely valuable, but as has been noted, it's also oversubscribed with more demand than resources, and many good proposals go unfunded each year. Funding hasn't kept pace with the number of affordable homes we need to keep producing. At Habitat, we'll continue to keep working hard to create and preserve affordable homeownership for families in the Twin Cities, and we ask for your partnership in this important work by supporting the Challenge Program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And we're joined now by Buffy Baranek from Southeastern Minnesota HRA. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Houseman and members of the committee. I am Buffy Baranek, the Executive Director for the Southeastern Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, also known as SEMSHRA, and I also co-chair the Legislative Committee for Minnesota NARO, the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Organizations. in SMTRA's 6-county program jurisdiction of Dodge, Goodhue, Wabasha, Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties, we provide housing services through federal, state, and local funding for rental assistance. We own and operate 40 different rental properties, and we also do residential rehab for both single family and multifamily projects. Since 2006, SMTRA has grown its rental property portfolio by about 33%, or 160 units in 11 different properties in 10 different cities and 3 different counties. So we really represent the southeastern corridor of our state. From its establishment, SMTRA, in 1981 from 2006, we were able to build affordable housing, and we only acquired one property during that time, and we had 29 properties. But since the early 2000s, SMTRA has not built any additional multifamily housing. And what I've seen is it's a much tighter and tighter funding supply, and it's really driven by 3 key factors: demand, and Robin just talked about this. There's a lot of competition for this funding. It's very oversubscribed. And when you're out here in greater Minnesota and you don't have a lot of resources, you have to think twice about going after funding. So the demand is one critical factor. Also building requirements and obviously cost. The ability to do an affordable housing deal with a single funding source is difficult or next to impossible. We did do it in the day, but it's not as easy as it used to be. The key ingredients in funding today are flexibility and eligible uses, and this is what really truly makes the challenge program exceptional. For greater Minnesota, it's even more difficult to rehab or preserve the naturally occurring affordable housing or build just because of size. The risk is greater for smaller properties. The amount of debt needed to often shifts these affordable properties with no rental assistance or no into a no-deal type situation. We worry about things like 15 to 20 years when rehab is going to be needed again. And if there's this deferred debt, what's the property going to be positioned like? Is it going to be underwater? The financial offer, the complexity, and the risk of getting funding has often outweighs the ability to build new multifamily projects. So flexibility, ease of use is really, really critical. SMTRA strongly supports the Challenge Program and MHFA's super RFP process for aligning funding sources. We've used this process for 3 of the 11 properties that we have acquired since 2006. And this support is really based on 4 key things. The Challenge Program is the state's most flexible source of funding for affordable and workforce housing, and it has been for some time. The Challenge Program supports Minnesota's making up to 80% of AMI for rental housing, for that multifamily housing, and 115% of AMI for the homeownership side. So it's really, we hit a broad spectrum of the homeowners, the housing continuum. Every dollar in state funding also, we're able to gap finance at least $3 in private funding. And for every dollar in state funding for preservation of federally assisted housing, $4 in future federal funding is secured. And in the properties where we've used the Challenge Fund, we've been able to preserve that rental assistance on those properties and do substantial rehab. As a legislative co-chair, I'll just remind the committee that Minnesota NARO has been a long supporter of the Challenge Program as well. Minnesota NARO represents 140 agencies across our state, and our support is based on the program's characteristics, including the flexibility that we've mentioned. So Minnesota Housing can use the funds to better respond to market conditions compared to other funding sources. This flexibility allows Minnesota Housing to support innovative approaches, and Robin hit on a lot of those. Program scope includes both affordable rental and homeownership. So on behalf of SMTRA and Minnesota NARO, we ask for your partnership in resourcing this important work by supporting the Challenge Program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do we have any questions of either the bill's author or our testifiers? Mr. Worth?
Madam Chair, there are no questions in the queue.
Representative Olson, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you to the testifiers for stating this, and thank you for the bipartisan group of co-authors on the bill. And with that, I just ask for member support, and I can renew my motion that House File 979 be laid over for possible inclusion.
And I believe there's an attachment that is in support of both your bill and Representative Howard's that went before. So That might be another thing that you might want to take a look at. Thank you, Representative Olson. House File 979 is laid over. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 11 at 10:30 a.m. There being no other business before us, we are adjourned.